This is KGN News Morning Magazine for Friday, December 2nd of 2022. I'm your host, Jack Armstrong. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, CU Boulder kicks off a three-day climate summit today. We will hear about some of its focuses on human rights and why some have decided to strike. Then, we hear about some unusual warblers who were confused by Boulder city lights and ended up in Boulder on their migration towards Mexico. Finally, we have the one, the only, Sports Talk with Jimmy Searfoss. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour, and Connections comes your way as always. The phone lines will be open. At 9:30, David McIntyre will be in the studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. And that's all still ahead this morning, but first, the headlines with KGN News' Stacey Johnson.
School officials placed Boulder High School on a secured status early Thursday afternoon following a safety tell tip. The tip source said there was a student off campus with a weapon. As part of the secure status, the Boulder Valley School District security team locked the main doors to the high school, but allowed class and activities to carry on as usual. School officials notified parents about the secure status, but did not provide information on what prompted the heightened security during initial communications. According to the Daily Camera, Boulder police found the student with a BB gun, but no other weapons, and as a result, lifted the secure status around 1:30 p.m. School officials did not reveal if the student is facing any disciplinary action or charges. Denver Water will maintain its strategy of removing lead pipes from the region's water system that involves giving out water filters to households and slightly boosting water alkalinity to ward off heavy metal degradation as the utility replaces the lead pipes. The Environmental Protection Agency gave a nod to the nearly $700 million plan on Thursday after reviewing results from a three-year agency study in which Denver Water replaced 15,000 lead pipes. According to federal officials, the utility successfully suppressed heavy metal levels to fractions of the allowable limits. In 2012, elevated levels of lead in the system prompted Denver Water officials to plan a wide-scale replacement of lead pipes. Starting in 2018, the utility pushed back on a regulatory mandate that requires the injection of orthophosphate into the water system to slow lead pipe corrosion. Denver Water argued that the chemical would harm humans and downstream waterways and pushed its alternative plan as a safer and more effective approach. As the I-70 construction project in central Denver wraps up, city, state, and federal officials celebrated the formal opening of a park that goes above I-70 in Denver's Elraria-Swansea neighborhood Wednesday. The Colorado Department of Transportation added plans for a park above Interstate 70 after community members protested the state's decision to expand the lower freeway, which since the 1960s has bisected the two previously connected neighborhoods. During the ribbon-cutting ceremony, officials said the four-acre park and covered structure to I-70 will reconnect communities that the highway wrongly bisected for decades. To make way for improvements and expansion to I-70, the Colorado Department of Transportation, starting in 2018, moved ahead in demolishing the I-70 viaduct, and in doing so, also removed over 70 homes and businesses in the lower-income minority neighborhood. Advocates and community groups from the neighborhood oppose the $1.3 billion construction project, saying CDOT should have rerouted it completely out of the area. Although the park is now complete, community members remain skeptical about the impacts from the highway expansion. The driver of a large tour bus sideswept at least 32 parked cars in Boulder Wednesday night along the 900 to 1200 blocks of Pleasant Street. The driver claimed he was unaware that he hit the vehicles. Boulder police charged the driver with multiple counts of hit and run and careless driving. Police say there were no injuries and all the known vehicles that the driver struck were unoccupied. Democrats in the United States House of Representatives elected Colorado Representative Joe Neguse as their party chair for the Policy and Communications Committee of the 118th Congress. Neguse, from Lafayette, won a third term in November, representing Colorado's 2nd Congressional District with 70% of the vote. According to the Daily Camera, Neguse's chair position will make him Colorado's highest-ranking congressman in a Democratic House leadership position in 85 years. In a press release statement Thursday, Ngu said he looked forward to communicating the work of the Democratic House to the American people. House Democrats also elected Representative Hakeem Jeffries of New York as their next minority leader, along with Massachusetts Representative Catherine Clark as the minority whip, and California Representative Pete Aguilar as Democrat caucus chairperson. Boulder County fire crews responded to a small wildland fire Thursday night in the Pine Brook Hills neighborhood of unincorporated Boulder County. The Boulder County Sheriff's Office said numerous emergency personnel responded to the quarter-acre fire, which burned in a wooded mountainous area during last night's high winds. Crews suppressed the fire just after midnight. The Sheriff's Office says no structures were threatened and there was no threat to public safety. For today's weather, the National Weather Service says there is a slight chance of rain and snow before noon, with skies turning sunny for much of the day. Today's highs will be in the low 40s for Fort Collins and the upper 40s and low 50s for Boulder and Denver. Temps are expected to fall during the afternoon hours. Boulder, the western suburbs, Fort Collins, and the northeast plains have a high wind warning in effect today, with winds potentially gusting to 65 miles per hour. Because of the high winds, the Boulder County Sheriff's Office is continuing the ban on open burning today. Tonight, skies will be mostly clear, with lows ranging from 13 to 20 degrees. The current temperature in Boulder is 52 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Jack Armstrong. CU Boulder and the United Nations Human Rights will kick off a three-day-long human rights-focused climate summit today. KGNU's Rosana Longobetter spoke with Alejandro Murillo, coordinator of CU Boulder's Climate Justice Program, about how social equity over the past few years has begun to shift the way people think about solutions to climate change.
In climate action, you're always taught there's three pillars: economics, science, and equity. And for most parts, I feel like our environmental movement has been really good at the economics and the science. But equity has always been thought of as like, we really want to do it, but we don't know how. And throughout the events that have been happening over the last few years, there has been this emphasis on we have to include equity on a much deeper level. It's not even just a pillar. It is, in my eyes, it's what makes the pillars, right? It's the fabric of everything that we do. And so really what I've seen is as we do focus on that and we do work on that, this immense transformation that occurs in organizations such as governments, nonprofits, in how they run their business, in the people that they connect with, in where they look for consultation, that leads to just better systems for everybody.
Because every culture has, you know, it's positive and it's negative in everything.
100%. And our diversity is one of our most amazing strengths. You get all kinds of creativity when you start bringing all these groups together and advance on things and not just have one or two communities where people really dominate a conversation and continue really with that one story, that one narrative that says that this is the one right way. And that's why we need everyone at the table in a manner that empowers, recognizes, and encourages everyone to participate.
Where can people go to find out more about this summit or joining environmental movements?
I'm a big fan. There's an up-and-coming website and organization here in town called the Boulder County Climate Justice Hive, and that's run through boulder.earth. If you just type in boulder.earth into your web browser, they have a fantastic calendar with all sorts of events all across the county, some in the greater Colorado area, that you can attend to get to know organizations, get to know people, and find places to get involved.
I have been speaking with Alejandro Murillo, Climate Justice Programs Coordinator at the University of Colorado. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longobetter.
A group of CU students and faculty will stage a climate strike outside of the climate summit today. Climate strike organizers say that despite CU's reputation as a green leader, the school has about $100 million invested in fossil fuels. KGNU's Alexis Kenyon spoke with David Paradis, a senior instructor who helped organize the strike, who says he sees the climate strike as a complement to the climate summit.
I think it's amazing that we have these students who are so motivated to undertake action to divest the university's funds from fossil fuel companies. And those fossil fuel companies have systematically and repeatedly misinformed the American public about the consequences of burning fossil fuels. And they began that campaign consciously in 1990s and repeated misinforming Americans about the effects of fossil fuels. So at this point, the students are viewing the continued investment in fossil fuels as enabling those entities that misinform the American people about fossil fuels. And we shouldn't do that. That's not what the university is about, is spreading misinformation. In fact, that's the opposite of our mission. We try to help people understand what's going on, not misinform them about what's going on. And investing in those fossil fuel companies perpetuates that misinformation that they're spreading.
How much of an investment does CU Boulder have in fossil fuels?
Well, the short answer to your question is, because it gets complicated, obviously, the short answer to your question is about $100 million in fossil fuel investments, and that's probably a conservative estimate.
Wow. So this isn't the first time CU Boulder students and faculty and community members have protested CU's investment in fossil fuels. What has been the response from the administration in the past?
Yeah, there have been a variety of responses depending on when and who you talk to. But generally speaking, CU has very longstanding ties to the fossil fuel industry. As you may well know, one of our previous presidents was a fossil fuels executive and very successful in that arena. And so it's very challenging for the administrators to make a change. But given that CU is one of the leading climate science research institutions in the world and probably the leading earth sciences university in the United States, it makes a lot of sense for the university to divest from fossil fuels so that we are doing what our research shows us that we need to do.
What would it mean to other universities for CU to decide to, you know, make this move? Do you think it would have any ripple effects?
I don't know. I mean, University of California system did it, and Harvard University has done it. And compared to them, CU is a fairly small institution.
And what happened to them? Was divesting in fossil fuels, you know, really as painful and impossible as so many industries make it out to be?
No, they're doing fine, actually. It's a really great question. You know, the world did not close in on them when they got out of fossil fuels. In fact, they've written a couple, University of California treasurer and chief financial officer have published a couple of open letters in, I think, the LA Times or the Wall Street Journal, talking about they're glad they did what they did. And they looked really smart in 2020 when fossil fuel prices went to zero. And maybe in 2022, it doesn't look as smart because fossil fuel prices are high right now. But I would say, well, wait a couple of years, they'll be low again. And in the meantime, you know, they used to say, I think they might still do, sell high and buy low. It's a good time to get out of fossil fuels.
David Paradis is a senior instructor at CU Boulder. For more information about today's climate strike, or for information about right here, right now, CU Boulder's climate summit that is happening all weekend, you can find links on our website, news.kgnu.org. David, thank you so much for talking with me today. I appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, Alexis.
For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.
About, you know, it feels
Up next, for the first Friday of the month, we bring you our monthly look at the natural world on the Nature Almanac.
It's December. What's happening in the natural world? Here are Boulder naturalists Scott Sievers and Ruth Carol Cushman.
We're on the university campus, CU at Boulder, right next to Regent Hall, and standing right under a beech tree that has been an absolute hot spot for birders for the past few weeks. I'm shaking the branches to make a nice little crackly noise. It still has some leaves on it. They're sort of a muddy green oval, lightly indented around the edges. But the reason that this has been such a hot spot is that aphids are feeding on these leaves. What are you finding, Scott? Any aphids over there?
I'm looking at the underside of the leaves because aphids usually feed on the bottom side of leaves to kind of hide themselves from predators.
Could they have frozen and fallen off in just the last few days, the aphids?
Yeah, even though a lot of insects have a chemical similar to antifreeze for their blood, if it's too cold, they may not be able to persist. So that they would either go and find a place to hibernate, or they would perish. Or the other option is that they got consumed by predators.
And we hope that's what happened to them. In mid-November, every time you came out here, you would see a group of people with binoculars around here. The attraction were the warblers, and the attraction for the warblers were the aphids. And there were some very rare warblers here, at least rare for Boulder. Do you hear any, Scott?
I've mainly been hearing chickadees, nuthatches, and a few finches. The chickadees and nuthatches, they have the ability to stay all winter, unlike the warblers, because the chickadees and nuthatches store pine seeds and spruce seeds from these ornamental plantings around campus. The finches are going to be persisting on trees that will have seeds and other plants that will have seeds. But the warblers, needing an insect diet, normally they're going to winter in Mexico and South America. So we're looking under these leaves for any evidence of aphids, and since it's now December, almost all that insect resource has gone. Now, how did the warblers get here? We're not really on the migratory path for things like Perula and Prothonotary warbler. These big cities act as beacons of light that confuse the birds because they're nighttime migrants and they get sucked into these cities. And then they're stuck looking for food. And so they're keying in on other resident birds to help them find food. Maybe a weather front pushed these warblers here and then they got stuck in the confusing lights of a big city.
That's a good reason to go along with the Lights Out program that has been pushed by Audubon. It would be much better if cities would dim down their lights and houses turn off their lights. And of course, now we wonder what happened to these birds that were here just a week or two ago. Did they manage to get out and continue on their migration course south, or did they freeze to death?
There's a chance that they got out of here. It depends on how much fat they added on their migration route and before they migrated.
We hope they winged their way on down to the Gulf Coast.
Ruth Carol Cushman and Scott Sievers are friends and Boulder naturalists.
Thanksgiving is over and everything, but I just want it on record on radio that Jimmy from Sports Talk thinks that cranberry sauce is the best side dish during Thanksgiving. Hello and welcome back to the very best sports show on KGNU, Sports Talk with Jimmy. I am your host, Jimmy Searfoss. Hope you're having a very safe, windy Friday morning. I know I had struggles just getting here just from the wind, but I'm here to talk about the biggest stories from across the Front Range, not the wind. And the biggest story in all of Boulder, Colorado right now is the head coaching job at the University of Colorado for their football team. And that is because NFL Hall of Famer and former MLB player Deion Sanders is rumored to become the head coach. Now, he hasn't signed any contracts yet, and that is very important to think about because Colorado has reportedly offered a lot of money, and the students are very excited, and I know recruits across the nation are very excited. This could change the entire landscape of how people look at Colorado because he is a massive brand. He draws a lot of attention to the university. He draws a lot of attention to himself. He's done very good things where he's coaching right now, and that is Jackson State, the historically black university. And he's brought a lot of attention towards HBCUs and his short time coaching them. And his short time coaching at Jackson State, he came in as a very high caliber coaching prospect. And he has brought that team to an 11-0 record in 2022. He's brought a ton of high-ranking recruits to the HBCU, and that was really his goal in coaching the team. He wanted to bring attention towards historically black universities, and he really did that. At one point, even this year, the famous college football show College Game Day came down to host their show at Jackson State when they played fellow HBCU Southern in their massive rivalry game that took place, which simply does not happen often, if at all. But he could be taking the job at Colorado, which would mean big money, not necessarily just for him, but for his coaches. Deion Sanders has played in a lot of places. He's made a ton of money over his career, but he has not been able to pay his coaches what they properly should be paid. Having a deal with a school like Colorado would increase the people around him's pay by a lot, and that could be a big factor for him. But like I said, nothing is even official yet. There's a ton of hype around this, but nothing is official yet. He may turn down the deal and decide to stay around with the HBCU. He has been very committed to bringing attention to schools like Jackson State and Southern and their importance in the last few years in his time coaching there. He interviewed for jobs at Texas Christian University and Colorado State last year and decided not to move there as well. So who even knows what is going to happen here? The rumors say it's close to coming to Colorado. We will see. But who knows? All we know is that it surely would be exciting if he came to Colorado. The recruits would come. Money would come to the program. But where would that leave the HBCUs? And that is all the time we have for today here on Sports Talk with Jimmy. I've been your host, Jimmy Searfoss. Make sure you tune in next week for the next segment of Sports Talk with Jimmy.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Jack Armstrong. Special thanks to Stacey Johnson, Rosana Longo-Better, Alexis Kenyon, and Jimmy Searfoss for their contributions to today's program. Up next, it's Connections, and that's after these headlines from the BBC.
Listener.